Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Thanks for tuning into the show today. Let's get right to our topic, the challenge of change. Yes, there's a lot of change always going on. And with change comes ambiguity, sometimes fear, surprises, and at times a sense that you really feel like you've been upended. My special guest today on the show is Christina DiPaolo. And she's got a lot to share on this topic. Christina is the founder and driving force behind dailyworklife.com and also the founder of Elysian Communications. Having worked in corporate America for many years, she decided in late 2011 to launch her own communications consulting firm that focuses on two main objectives. The first being to help companies deal with big change. And the other is helping leaders become better reflections of their true selves through coaching. Christina is here to share her journey with you and give advice. It's great to have you on the show, Christina. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, we're so happy you're here. And talking about change, my goodness, there's always something going on. But let's give a little back history. So you started in financial services. I believe you moved over to pharmaceuticals and HR and then finally launched your own business. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about your journey to become a business owner.
Absolutely. I often characterize my career as a series of happy accidents. I'm probably not the most planful person when it comes to my own career. I know that there are people I've known over the years who were pretty clear about where they wanted to be when they were 30 and where they wanted to be when they were 40, et cetera, et cetera. To me, I always held out the ambition of being on my own at some point and working directly with leaders. But how I got there, I wasn't exactly sure how that was going to transpire. I figured it would be sort of a much more organic process, and it had been. So I started in financial services out of college because I had studied economics as an undergrad. And then in the course of the first third of my career, I decided to go back to graduate school and focus on corporate communications because I realized that that was a naturally strong area for me, helping people in general translate ideas, strategies, broad concepts, to be able to connect with different constituency groups. I had an interest in that and a talent. So I went back to grad school for that. And then because of personal circumstances, the birth of my first child, as well as what was happening in my career, I shifted to pharmaceuticals, partly because I had been working in downtown Manhattan in financial services, which I adored. But it just wasn't working from a lifestyle perspective with a newborn at home. And living in New Jersey, there's a lot of pharmaceutical companies to choose from.
Especially. Oh, yes. Pharmaceutical capital.
Yes, exactly. So I moved there and another happy accident, moved into HR communications because even though I had been doing external and public relations and financial services, obviously I was moving into a new industry and a new field. So I didn't have the background to be able to then move into external comms. So my first employer said, well, why don't we put you in HR comms? And I said, okay. And I fell into it at a time when the company that I was working for, Pharmacia, about a year after I joined them, announced that they were going to be acquired by Pfizer.
Oh, my gosh. What a time to fall into it. That would keep you very busy.
Very, very busy. And it was, it was a bit of a whirlwind because up to that point, I had never been through a large scale organizational change of that capacity. There had been things that I had been involved with on the financial services side, but this was new. And because of the role that I was playing in HR communications, I got to work on some of the integration communications and began working with my counterparts on the Pfizer side, which for me wound up being a wonderful experience. And then Pfizer asked me to join them. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to or not, because it wasn't what I had been thinking of.
Right.
But my second child came along, and Pfizer, you know, was rather generous with wanting me to stay with the new company. And I thought, okay, why not? So I did. And then I got involved, heavily involved in integration communications. And when I left them in 2008, I moved to Merck, knowing that I wanted to get back into more traditional corporate communications over time. And I was with them for about 9 months, and boom, the Schering Plough merger came along. And because of all the experience I had had with Pfizer and Pharmacia and that integration, I was well positioned to be able to help Merck on the inside with that acquisition as well. With that,
was it easier the second time going through the acquisition process?
It was easier for me individually because I sort of knew the ropes. I mean, each situation is different, of course, but there was a lot of familiarity with the territory. And from a career and really from a psychological perspective, it was familiar to me. It wasn't familiar to a lot of people that I worked with because Merck didn't have a history, really, of mergers. The last merger that they had done was in the mid 20th century, last large scale merger. So there were a lot of people for whom this was brand new. And that allowed me to have a different perspective as to what they were going through and how I was able to contribute. But then I left them in late 2011 to start my own company, which I had thought about doing for a while. I had thought about doing it between the transition of Pfizer and Merck, but instinctively the timing didn't feel right at that point. But at the end of 2011, knowing that the company was still going through, Merck was still going through a lot of growing pains because of the merger, because my experience is the merger on paper can happen relatively quickly, but the real work of integrating two entities takes a lot longer.
Oh, sure.
You know, and it's almost more painful because to do it right, you really have to look at what is the essence of the company and how does this new organism, really, because you're creating something rather new, how is it going to function going forward? So to me, the timing just felt right. I had an opportunity to be able to leave on very good financial terms, another happy accident, and that's what kind of led me there.
That's really exciting. I'm curious, your time in the corporate world, maybe you could just share a little bit about male versus female and what you saw in terms of the working relationships and even were they judged differently?
Being in financial services, and you know, when I first joined financial services right out of college in the late 1980s, you know, I saw some, watching what's happening now in the tech industry with what's surfacing with some of the behavior, I did see some of that behavior firsthand when I first started working. And it saddens me to think that we're still talking about this, we're still dealing with it. But I think that it's important to look at how men and women are treated in the workplace in the same way that men and women are treated in society in general. Because a workplace is just a microcosm with certain rules and parameters and focus. But it's a microcosm of what's happening in the world more broadly. And I think one of the big challenges, even though I do believe that there is a true interest on behalf of companies that recognize the importance of having diverse workforces that represent the communities that they work in, and the markets that they're trying to target. There is a lot of, I think, good intent there. But men and women in general are treated differently. And one of the things that I am working on, building out a new business line specifically related to helping women leaders, has to do with the fact that there are certain social and cultural stereotypes, archetypes, that we're all ingrained in, and we all follow one way or the other. There's a way that women are judged in political environments and business environments and social environments that is different than the way that men are judged. And that prevents, in my observation over the years, women leaders really being able to fully step into the skills and the authority that their position in theory confers upon them. So if you see a male colleague in a business environment get upset about something and forcefully and fully express his opinion, if you had a female colleague that did the same thing in that same style, the judgment of what she said, and more importantly, who she is going to be quite different. And until we can get to the point of being able to look at the individual first, so looking at women as individual human beings first and women second, in the same way that men are looked at as individual human beings first and men second, until we get to that point, and it's going to take a long time to get there, but I think it's critical to get there, then women will continue to be treated differently than their male peers, even though their objectives may be the same, their positions may be the same. I won't talk about pay because we know that that's a lingering issue.
Right.
But their ability to really be peers and true equals is going to be hamstrung until we allow individual women to act as who they are individually first and not judge them based on, gee, she is a hysterical woman or she is a queen bee or whatever other, you know,
these labels.
Label you want to put on her.
So, Christina, with the, you said a lot about the social and the cultural archetypes. Mm-hmm. And let's just say that we start to see a shift with a new generation, maybe, you know, the millennials or even next up is, I guess it's Gen Z. And let's say that we start recognizing women as individual human beings. Do you think that if these changes are being made and women themselves and even men are changing their mindset, will the organization itself naturally change because it's a microcosm? Or, you know, is this like a full shift in a business model? Well, what kind of thought and action goes behind this?
Well, it has to be both. And one of the things I think that cripples the business world in general, and it impacts men as well as women, but we tend to see it more with women because of the whole issue of work-life balance, right? And if you become a parent, what are the obligations of balancing that in your career? But oftentimes, businesses are predicated on this idea that your primary devotion in life is to the business and or your career. And what that does is it narrows down the types of individuals that are able and or willing to make that ultimate sacrifice. Because it is a huge sacrifice.
Sure.
To say that, you know, you're going to sleep 4 hours a night and for the other 20 hours, you know, you're focused on your job and that's it. And your life outside of it sort of happens at the fringes. So as much as it's critically important for there to be a change in attitude, and expectations about people, not based on their gender primarily, but based on where their strengths and capabilities lie. At the same time, it's important to look at these structures and say, are we going to demand something from people that is going to wind up narrowing the field? So maybe we're going to get the same kinds of people leading businesses with the same types of approaches and behaviors. Or do we need to kind of look at the way that we get work done as organizations and look at what does leadership responsibility entail? So that we can open up the venue of people that we can pull from.
That's really interesting. And you look at some of the newer companies that are popping up, they seem, they have great cultures, diverse cultures. And even though there are demands, you know, you have demands on the job or in your career, they make it almost like you want to be there with the food that they're serving in their cafes and the pods that they give you where you could take a nap or read a book so that you can be as comfortable and want to be there as much as possible rather than putting that demand, as you said, on certain types of people and narrowing it down. I wonder if that's a way to balance it out.
It is, but I think one needs to be aware that there's a flip side to that as well. So if you make the environment super comfortable for people, then you're still implying that they need to spend most of their time and their focus there.
Right.
There was a piece I had seen recently about Silicon Valley. And obviously there's a lot of pieces out there about Silicon Valley, but this one was talking about how part of the culture out there rewards and recognizes and promotes the idea of 9 to 5, my God, that's archaic. You know, I'm always working. I'm valuable because I'm always working. And that's the same type of environment that we talked about in a traditional corporate setting. In a place that, you know, may have a foosball table, right?
Right.
Outside of the cafeteria, and they may have free food all day. But that mindset is still there. And the reason why I am so deeply interested in women leaders in particular and where they're going and how they best and most comfortably express their authority and their skills, on top of this idea of what is it about the cultures in our professional environments that, you know, seem almost unreasonable, is that there's an incredible amount of talent that's left out of the conversation. You know, less than 20% of all Fortune 500 CEOs are women. In fact, I think the number is a bit lower than that. I've written on that a number of times.
Wow.
Yet women are, if you look at global statistics, slightly under 50% of the global population.
Amazing.
So where is all of that potential talent, all of that knowledge, all of that ability? It's not being applied to institutions that have a tremendous commercial and even political institutions. If you look at the number of women leaders in senior positions in governments around the world, half the population is really not represented. So half the ideas, half the experience, half the ability is just being left off the table. And so that, to me, has very broad long-term implications.
It definitely does. So is that, you know, would you go back and say to women who aspire to be leaders, you know, hey, listen, you kind of have to get out of your comfort zone, make this push toward leadership, which, of course, can be chaotic when you're out of your comfort zone. How can women push through the chaos and the barriers? What can they do?
Well, first, it comes to self-realization, right? You know, how are we reacting in the situations that we're put in the work environment? How are we feeling about some of those automatic reactions that we may have? How clear and conscious are we of, you know, upholding some norms that we have always felt that we need to uphold? You know, the archetypes that women are always going to be more collaborative, right?
Yeah.
We're going to partner better. We're going to be more service-oriented. We're, you know, and perhaps as a group, that's true. But each individual woman should be looking at herself and saying, but is that true about me? Where is it that I am providing the most value? Where are my inherent skills and talents, and how can they be best applied? And at the same time, it's critically important that women are supportive of each other.
Yes.
So what are we doing to help reach out to other women, to promote other women, to push together for greater transparency when it comes to pay and promotions, how women are represented on boards of directors and in C-suites and things of that nature, the kinds of roles that women are being given, so that we start looking at each other as a collection of individual human beings first, right? Because we know that we're all different. We have similarities, but just by the nature of the shape of our skin doesn't mean we all think alike. And we know that there are strengths and weaknesses that each of us have. So how can we recognize what those are in ourselves and then be supportive of each other as we push for deeper change in institutions across the board?
Excellent. And I do believe that we clearly need to find that path toward being more supportive. But we'll get there. You see so many more women conferences. I hear women speaking out all of the time, helping other women with resources, even coaching them on how to get onto boards. Mm-hmm. So I do think we still have a lot of work ahead.
There's a great book that was written by journalist J. Newton Small called Broad Influence. I read it in spring. And her primary proposition is that things start to really change when you have gender diversity of 20% or greater. So if you have leadership teams that are 20% women instead of just, you know, one or two women on a team of, you know, on a broad leadership team, when you have that kind of representation in governments, when you have that kind of representation on boards of directors, 20% seems to be that magic mark where their influence is more directly felt. And if anything, I think that that's a very valuable first threshold to cross. And then eventually, you know, it should be as close to 50% as possible. We're 50% of the population. So, you know, it's not a complex math problem to figure out.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that resource. And Christine, I'm just going to ask you to hold all of your thoughts just for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break, give some love to our sponsor. And I also want to mention that Women Worldwide has joined the C-Suite Radio Network, and you can find all of our episodes on c-suiteradio.com. And be sure to check out the other great business podcasts that are there too.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. I've been chatting with my guest, Christina DiPaolo, about change, women in leadership, and getting out of your comfort zone. Okay, Christina, so let's pivot a little bit toward you, maybe getting out of your comfort zone. Tell us, is being an entrepreneur and business owner everything that you expected, more happiness, or just more headaches?
Well, it is what I expected, although slower. So one of the things that I have been dealing with, and I don't think that it's unusual, because of the fact that, you know, I chose to break out on my own at a time when the demands on me as a mom, because I have two teenage children, my daughter is 17, my son is 14, when that was just starting to ramp up. So, of course, you know, I picked the perfect time to do this, right?
Right.
So, you know, being an entrepreneur or a business owner and the kind of work that I do, I don't have a storefront. I'm not selling, you know, at this point in time, I'm not selling a specific product. I'm selling a service. Means that you are always looking for right? Where's the next contract? And, you know, I mentioned earlier about my career being a series of happy accidents. It has proven true also in being a business owner, because the types of people that I've met over the years and worked with, I've had some partnerships with large globally renowned consulting firms where I've been brought in to support them on a lot of merger and acquisition transactions. That has occurred for me. And that was only because of people that I had known and previously worked with who called me up and said, hey, can you help with this?
Oh, that's great.
A lot of clients, most of my clients, I have not had to go out and market directly to people that I've never met before. So I fortunately don't have to do the cold call, because I've known so many people over the years that they know of me. They know of my reputation that I built over time, and they have reached out to want to work with me. So I've been quite fortunate. That being said, that doesn't mean that there aren't times sometimes when my head hits the pillow at night and I think, oh my goodness, okay, I'm going to be busy through the end of October, but then what? And by the way, there's 10 things going on in my kids' schools that I'm involved with in some way, shape, or form as well. So it's sort of a constantly moving ride. And sometimes, like an amusement park ride, you know, you're going up, right, the roller coaster, mm-hmm. and then sometimes, boom, you're going down really fast. And I find when you're going down really fast, you have more projects than you know how to handle, but you power through it. And then you have periods where, just like going up the roller coaster, it seems very calm and quiet and almost slightly boring. And then, boom, you're down again.
Exactly.
I think you have to have a temperament that allows you to roll with things. Because until you get to a point where you are large enough and busy enough to start to build bigger scale. And I have friends who have firms that do communications work that have a roster of subcontractors and or, you know, even regular employees. And they are still going out there, you know, every year. It's like, okay, who what are our existing contracts and what can we go out and gain as well? There's a purity to it, but you've got to be comfortable with that roller coaster sense at times.
Oh, you said so many things that just resonated with me so much. And I'm still sort of chuckling to myself about when you're an entrepreneur, it's like being on an amusement ride. Because I totally get that visual of the up and down with the roller coaster. But you made a really important point about your network. And I think that's why I tell so many younger professionals that, you know, your contacts, your networking is so important, and you've got to keep up with it. And you always want to be able to tap into that network, especially as an entrepreneur. And when you made your transition, you also said those happy accidents with people in your network. It was the same way for me. When I ventured off as an entrepreneur, it was actually the gentleman that I was running his, he had two small agencies. He then became my client. So, you know, just taking what you have and turning it in a different direction really, really helps. So that's interesting about what you also said, where it was slower than expected, because I figured coming out of corporate world where, you know, everything's really, you get this picture of big and slow, but the perspective, the way you lined it up, I certainly understand with having teenagers and what their lives are like. So that was really good. Thanks for sharing that. What about challenges, maybe, other than, you know, the big ups and downs, or were there any specific challenges that you didn't expect, that maybe you thought you were going to be great at something, but, oh my goodness, wow, this really took me out of my comfort zone?
For me, I would say the challenge, and I'm still trying to conquer, because I know myself well enough that over the years of my, you know, professional working within corporate environments, you have a lot of resources available to you. So even if you don't, you know, have a direct admin or anything of that nature, and I was fortunate enough to have that for a number of years in different roles, there's just a lot of stuff to keep track of. You know, and, you know, as simple as, okay, I've got cataloged all my expenses because I know I'm going to have a nice visit with the accountant at some point. And how do I, now I've got to block out time to do that, to keep on top of that and make sure that I keep scrupulous records. Even the networking that we talked about, there are times when you can make a lot of great networking connections, but then suddenly, you don't have time to follow up. And I know for myself, I can keep as many records as possible. But, you know, I'm having worked in corporate environments, I'm used to having people who would occasionally nudge me and say, hey, Christina, you know, you planned 2 weeks ago to send an email to this person. Have you done it yet? And I would say, oh, yeah, that's right. And I'll spend the, you know, 5 or 6 minutes doing that. But I find on my own, there are so many other pressing concerns that just kind of come over the transom that those things can fall by the wayside. So to me, that sort of encapsulates the kinds of challenges that I'm facing. It's not the work. It's not meeting the client needs. It's nothing of the basics, but it's these things that kind of keep you going that surprised me how much focus and attention they really take.
Well, they do. They take so much time. When I switched from agency world to being a consultant, that was my challenge as well. And it took me a long time to realize that I needed serious help because my focus had to be on the network and growing the business. So I don't know. It sounds like you might need a virtual assistant, which is what I did. And it was the best thing that I've ever done. So, you know, if you want a recommendation on that, we can talk after the show. I'd be happy.
Thank you. I go back and forth a lot on that.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm the only one because you think to yourself, okay, I know I need to make an investment in where I'm going, but is it the right time to make the investment in where I'm going and how, you know, it's,
yes,
you put yourself in a bit of a bind, in trying to make that decision, but you know, instinctively that it can help push you a little bit higher, which I think gets to the point about people who are entrepreneurs or solopreneurs, you know, to use that catchphrase, we have to give ourselves the permission to invest, even if we don't see a direct one-to-one payoff. So it's easy to say, I'm doing a lot of client assignments. I've got to go out. I have to buy a new laptop, right? You know, because I need, you know, I need more processing space. I need something that's faster. I need something that I can use for presentations. I'll buy all the accessories, you know, et cetera, because I see directly I'm going to a client meeting in 3 weeks and I need this.
Right.
But the things that feel like, well, you know, I'm kind of investing in things that I think are important, but I'm doing them right now. And that's okay, isn't it? That I think we have to push through to say, no, this is important because I can't do everything. When I was leaving Merck to go out on my own, I was quite fortunate to be able to have some outplacement services that they provided for me, and I took advantage of it. And the outplacement firm that I was working with had this half-day seminar on starting your own business. What was fascinating to me in that was they outlined a series of, just like, you know, a leadership team in a corporation or institution, the key roles that you need to address somehow.
Oh, interesting.
Right? So like who's, you know, the chief marketing officer role and the CFO role and the chief operations and the HR role if you're working with subcontractors and then the CEO role, right? The visionary, things like that. And they challenged the class, the instructor challenged the class to say, look at yourself and look at these roles. Which ones do you think you can do?
Mm-hmm.
And which ones do you think you need some help with? And keep that in mind because at one point, you're going to need to find a way to fill in some of these roles because you cannot do them all.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, no matter how much we, and entrepreneurs, I think, tend to do this. Oh, I could just do this and get it done more quickly. But at some point, it just doesn't scale. There's only, you know, one of you, one of me. When you went through that seminar that pointed out the different roles, did you see or did you quickly say to yourself, wow, there are some new skills and competencies that I better learn as an entrepreneur? And did you feel that, or some of the things that were being shared, you already had being in the corporate environment? What did that look like?
I did. I felt that the visionary role, the marketing role, at a certain level, I could do. The personnel, the HR sort of related role, you know, as I've had to partner with other people and even some of the contracting. They didn't talk about, you know, sort of a legal role, but, you know, when you're out on your own, you do a lot of contracting, right?
You're
good at looking at master service agreements. But I knew that the CFO related role, even though, you know, my needs are pretty basic and I can slog through it, as well as that sort of administrative operational role, I knew that those would be stress points for me.
Right.
And I realized that I needed to understand what those roles entailed enough that I didn't let them totally fall by the wayside, because that would have been foolish. But I also knew, you know, given where I was in my career and my life, I wasn't going to take the time and effort to really learn them. What I have found over the course of my entire career, whether on the corporate side or you know, being out on my own, is that with each experience that I have had, I've tried to go toward work that I am curious about. Something where I know that I am going to be growing and learning. And I think when I work with my coaching clients, this is important. Do you really understand what deeply interests you, what is easy and natural for you to do, so you can apply yourself at a different level than someone for whom it's not comfortable? And how do you find experiences? How do you look out for opportunities that will give you chances to explore that further? Deepen your reservoir of knowledge and experience that continually makes you uniquely valuable. What is uniquely valuable about any leader is what's going to keep propelling them forward to higher and better roles. Because if you do what anybody else can do in the way that anybody else can do it, there's nothing unique about you.
Right. There's nothing different.
No. No. So, you know, I could look at you on paper compared to someone else and, you know, it's a 50-50 decision.
Sure.
Whereas if you're pursuing what continually makes you richer and better and deeper in your skill set, makes you more unique in how you do what you do and how you bring about results, that builds a reputation that if you continue to uphold it is impenetrable and makes you phenomenally valuable. So, you know, when I think about the skills that are needed to run a business on my own, I can be familiar with some of those skills, but it's not going to add to my value with clients if I become really great at the finances for running my business.
Right.
It's not going to help them. It's not going to make me better at what I do. So I turned to outside resources, right, to help me with that. The same thing with the operational or administrative end. I can muddle through, but if I take the time to build myself up in that area, then I've taken time away from continually making my skill set and my value proposition unique and compelling.
Well, so Christina, when you go after what you are curious about, so you discuss deepening your reservoir of knowledge because you feel passionate about something, are you more pushed to make it happen, or do you wait patiently and everyone has a destiny that's going to be fulfilled? Like it could be a happy accident. What do you think? Or a little bit of both.
So when I think about that question, when I saw that question, I immediately went to Forrest Gump.
I love Forrest Gump.
Okay. And of course, you know, I think in a past life I was a researcher or something like that, because like I love to research information. So of course I go on the internet and I look up Forrest Gump quotes. And the quote that I think captures my answer to that question, which is really the character's quote, is,
I know the quote you're gonna say.
I don't know. Okay. Have a destiny, or if we're all just floating around accidental like on a breeze, but I think maybe it's both.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I've always held that there are, if you can sort of visualize, swirling above you are opportunities. They're constantly flying by, you know, almost like birds in a migratory pattern, right? They're always there. And the question becomes, when do you see those opportunities, and when do you feel it's the right time for you just to reach your hand up and allow one to fall into your palm? So we make opportunities to the extent that we recognize an opening. And then we have been, if we're thinking this through fully, we're in a way always preparing ourselves to be able to grab it when it's there, when the time is right and when it's there. But you have to be ready to grab it. And you have to be ready and willing to see it. Because if you're not, you could have a million opportunities.
They just go by.
You're not ready for them. It's almost pointless.
Yeah, I like the way you phrased that. You have to recognize an opening. And yeah, that means you have to be open in so many ways to do that. Christina, maybe you could just give some quick advice to other professionals on making big, bold moves and transitions so that they can reach new business heights.
I would suggest that there are two elements that have to be firmly in place. So first is what we were just talking about. You feel that you know yourself and what you have to offer and what you're curious about doing more, which just drives you to be better. Do you feel that you understand that well enough and that the timing is right for you to step forward? Because it is a big change. It's different. There are going to be good periods. There'll be not so good periods. You have to be willing to step into space that is very new and very different and may feel kind of uncomfortable and strange at first, but also quite wonderful. And the second is, have you built up your base of reserves, whether it's reserves of support from the people in your life, whether it's reserves in terms of the network of people that you have cultivated relationships with over the years, not just I met this person, you know, at a mixer and I gave him my business card. No, people that you really know and who know you. Or it could even be financial. You know, do I feel that I have enough stored up that I can weather some of the ups and downs and the ambiguity so that I'm not being purely driven by I have to put food on the table? Because that'll force you to make different sets of decisions. So if you can sort of line up that practical reserves with where you are and what you know of yourself and your readiness, then you're ready for the change. And for each person, it's different. Sometimes it's driven by circumstance. You know, something has happened, something has really changed, and they have to jump into something new and they're ready for it. Sometimes it's just a decision that you make, which may have nothing to do with what seems to be happening on the outside, but is really deeply happening for you on the inside.
Great. Excellent advice. Christina, last question, super easy. Mm-hmm. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
So a couple of resources. Obviously, there is LinkedIn, you know, LinkedIn, which has kind of changed everything, right, in the profession.
Yes, it sure has. So
you can find me on LinkedIn at Christina DiPaolo. Pretty simple. And you can
you know, find there information on my prior history, some of the posts and the writings that I have done, the things that I am interested in and following, which may be of value to people as well. And obviously, you can get in touch with me through LinkedIn. There is also, you mentioned, Deirdre, earlier on, Daily Work Life, dailyworklife.com, which is a blog that I have been running since May of 2013. It's sort of my, it's my little passion project, but it also serves another purpose because I write quite often about the work environment, about the meaning of work. And in particular, I've taken much more of a bend over the last couple of years to focusing on leadership issues broadly, as well as women leadership related issues as well. So you can find out more about me and my point of view and my perspective through that. And finally, there is ElysianCommunications.com, which is my company website, and that gives you a sense of the clients that I've served and the different types of services that I offer. And you can contact me through any of those sources.
Excellent. Christina, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show and share your journey and all of your advice. We really appreciate your insights. So
thank you. This has been wonderful. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.